send you some of the strange patterns that we get that not just us, but the whole planet's been doing some kind of funny stuff, you know?
The whole planet's doing some funny stuff, and gosh, yeah. Oh my God, how can that be happening? Is it... Why would things just seem to be insane? I just can't imagine. And getting more insane by the day? What?
An insane thought system for an insane world.
insane. Insane in the membrane. Insane in the brain. Remember that? You probably don't. I had teenage children when that was popular.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. So anyway, good morning, Bruce, and welcome everyone. Here we are on the journey home, and Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson, every week we get together, and this week or this year or these next couple years probably. last year we did Gary Renard's newest book, The Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, History of Mighty Companions, and that seemed to go pretty well. And this year we're doing The Journey Home with Ken Wapnick, and we're going through the obstacles to peace in A Course in Miracles. So it's a really exciting section, because if you were wondering, if you have any questions, if you've never thought about why is everything so insane here, this will explain it to you in a very clear way, you know, why it is that everything is so crazy. So we are in the section called The Undoing of the Ego Through Forgiveness. And Bruce, you want to start, or you want to tell us anything about anything that's going on? Or
you know, I don't have a whole lot of news. I have been doing, I'll quickly mention, I've been having some ongoing conversations with Dr. Bob Rosenthal about his new book, From Nevermind, Nevermind. We just finished a second conversation about the second chapter in his new book, and a lot of interesting stuff. So if anybody's interested, you know, very a great intro to the course and a refresher for people who, you know, have studied the course for many years. It's a great, really excellent book. So if you go to aciblog.com, you can see that featured prominently on the homepage, and on other interesting articles and audios and videos that might be of interest to our students. So anyway,
yeah, that, you know what, Bruce, your ACIM blog is really a great website for resources, and I did see that interview with Dr. Bob, and also really appreciate the email that you sent out. Suggesting that maybe I could interview Jackie Laura. That's the thing I got out of that email.
Oh, good.
I mean, there was a lot of stuff in that email. It was really great, and I'm glad you sent it. But what I got out of that was, hey, I can interview Jackie Laura on ACIM Gather. And so that's one thing, as I get on and I'm getting a new computer, I'm going to be doing a lot of more interviews and more trying to bring people in through different forums and formats. My cat's begging at the door, but I'm not getting up. There's three other adults in this house who can take care of him. Anyway, well, he comes to me, I know, because I'm not a very good cat mama, because I'm not a cat mama. It's not my cat. Anyway, let's see.
Yeah, actually, to kind of respond to what you're just sharing, having lived in the Denver area for about 5 years, I got to occasionally zip down to the Pueblo area and met Regina and you and several other people on different occasions, but also in the other geographic direction to Denver, which was a bit closer for me, on quite a few occasions. So I was able to make it to the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center in Denver, and they had a lot of really good programs there. Lynn Corona and Tim Wise have an ongoing series of classes that they do online as well as in person at the Miracle Center, as well as other places in the area and around the countries in different times. And Susan Dugan is another excellent teacher. I think the most of the videos on my YouTube channel are with her. We've had a long series of video conversations, and those are also on ACM blog. And then more recently, almost several other course teachers that particularly
C.A. Brooks, I know.
C.A. Brooks, for sure, yep. I don't think she actually presents at the Miracle Center, but she's also in the Denver area, and I have conversations with her about once a month. If you go up to Boulder, Doug Sparks, he doesn't have a website, and there's a few posts on the Rocky Mountain Miracles site and a few on the ACIM blog. I have three or four probably audios I've recorded. I just needed to put up on the site. Anyway, he's just a wonderful course teacher. He studied with Ken Wapnick early on and really lives the course as well as sharing it. So highly encourage people to check him out if you're in the Boulder area, or if you want to look through acimblog.com or also the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center website. You'll find some of references to his work. But he's sort of semi-retired, but boy, he gave a workshop at our place in Castle Rock a few years back. It's just wonderful, and I've attended several others that he's given, and just can't say enough good things about it.
that's excellent, and I think I know the name as well, Doug Sparks, right? What was I going to say? I guess it just slipped my mind. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Anyway, since we were talking about sort of people to the Denver metro area, course-related things, Denver is very fortunate to have the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center because it's such a wonderful hub for course-related things. Literally something going on every day of the week there, and wonderful resource for people who are studying course.
Yeah, and it's in a really beautiful area of Denver by the University of Denver, and mm-hmm. is really very nice in the DU area. So cool. But there was something else that I was going to ask you about, but I cannot recall what it is. I mentioned I'm doing a fundraiser to get the money to get a new computer. Reverend Tony is going to send me his old Mac. He says it's about 8 years old, and it's I'm not sure anything about it at all. It's just a little, he says it's just like a little rectangle. It's not very big, and of course
Mini
I have
Mac.
A Mini Mac, yeah. And so I have to have my own keyboard and monitor and everything, which I do. But I'm going to try to set up the radio software on that Macintosh computer. I might be calling you to ask you something about.
Well, that's fine. We can take that offline. But yeah,
Max, I don't. So, but anyway, but I'm going to get for my. I am going to buy. That really solves one dilemma, because I had two dilemmas. One was that the radio computer is just about dead, and the other is that this my own laptop, my own PC that I'm working from, is damaged and doesn't work correctly. So I'm going to have to get that. You know, that's the main thing I'm going to be getting is a new laptop with capabilities of doing videos and going on Zoom and all that kind of stuff, and so I'm very excited about that, and it's kind of a new chapter in my life, starting I guess today is like the new Lynn, the new life of Lynn is starting today, and I just understand completely that now's the time to do what I need to do, and I'm here for a purpose, so let us just focus on that and do the best job possible. That's the way I look at it. So
exactly.
You know, get the equipment you need to do it. So
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and when you said I had two dilemmas, I was thinking, well, we really all have one, but the ones in the world that we seem to have sometimes can be, you know, vast in number. But if you can distill it down to two, that's doing pretty good.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I have one dilemma, and that dilemma is I can't talk to everybody in the world at the same time. and hear everyone in the world at the same time. I can't.
On the level of four, maybe.
I mean, that's the dilemma, though, is that I feel like I'm separated from my source, and I feel like I'm separated from my brothers. And that's really the whole dilemma, isn't it, of everything, is that belief in separation.
Yeah.
It just is made more evident when the separation is made by a piece of equipment but the separation is maintained through that as well, because I can sit at home in my room and never leave and have all the contacts with everybody in the world I want to talk to. But then, you know, what about people I meet in person to person, you know? you got to have a balance, I think.
Well, it's interesting because, I've been back a week now, for 2.5 weeks that I was in California, and I, on the way down, going through Southern Oregon, on the way back, on the return trip, sat in on a couple of study groups and met with a bunch of friends I hadn't seen in person in 7 years. In fact, you know, several of the people on the Wednesday night study group that we do online, I kept thinking, well, have I ever actually met this person in person? And realized, no, we actually haven't met in person, quote unquote. But we felt, you know, I feel like I know some of the people online that I've, you know, conversed with for years better than some of my neighbors down the street that I rarely see, you know, so who really come out of their houses.
Exactly, exactly.
I'm much, you know, less of a hermit than they have in some orders of magnitude, but at least I do try to get into town and go to some social things when I can. but it's all kind of relative, and I think, you know, to tie it back into what we're here for, is to undo the ego through forgiveness. you know, it's just, I think, important to remember that, like you were pointing out, that the gaps and the seeming separation is really just a construct of the mind, and because of that, we can choose a different thought system where that construct doesn't apply, and recognize that we are in contact 24/7, 365 with not just those that we call closest to us, or the ones that we think of as friends and the ones we think of as enemies, but literally everything and everyone. And quantum mechanics tells us that, although, you know, most quantum physicists don't spend their time with the philosophical implications of that, and certainly with the underlying causality of that, which of course in Miracles tells us is unconscious guilt, that we made up a world to hide from the idea that we could have pulled off this crazy thing that is reinforced through our sensory data and the ego's interpretation of that data 24/7, 365. But there's another way of looking at the world, and we could see peace instead of this, and we could see that our holiness really is all there is, and all that good stuff, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Blessed is the Son of God. So
blessed is the Son of God. Every 10 minutes, thank you.
Yeah. should we dive into reading?
Yes. Why don't you go ahead and start?
Yeah, I seem like our preambles keep taking longer. So, but that's okay, because you know there's not any time constraint that we have for reading this. So anyway, we have been reading for, a few months now, The Journey Home, Obstacles to Peace in A Course in Miracles by Ken Wapnick, and we are on the top of page 20. So we haven't got too far, but we're in the chapter one. And this section is called The Undoing of the Ego Through
Forgiveness. We've gone back and reread things, too.
We have.
So.
We have, which is good, because you know, as so much of the Course and so much of Ken's writing, pretty much all of it, really, all for this part, you know, there's such profound and helpful and you know, wonderful content that's worthy of pondering and you know, reviewing and coming at from different angles that, you know, rereading, I think, is a good thing. So, anyway. But we'll start a whole new section here. The Undoing of the Ego Through Forgiveness. Inherent in the four obstacles to peace again, the ego's defensive strategy to protect its individuality from the decision maker changing its mind is their own undoing. So basically, all the defenses are undone because the decision maker can change his mind. And tag, we're it. Okay, my quick aside there. Back to the reading. In chapter 28, Jesus refers to the process whereby the Holy Spirit leads us up the ladder, separation, let us down. And he's got a couple of references from the text of chapter 28. This provides us with the context in which to discuss the process of ego's undoing, which is a simple reversal of ego's layering, uncovering these layered defenses to what lies beneath them until the final layer is removed, revealing the simple choice for individuality that was the beginning of the dream. The following paragraph, which we shall consider again under the fourth obstacle, nicely summarizes this process of uncovering the layers of the four obstacles until the love that had been concealed is allowed simply to be. Before I read this paragraph, the word context reminded me of part of the conversation I had with the second chapter of Bob Rosenthal's book the other day, and which again is on ACM blog if you want to check that out. Because we went over in great depth, how this world doesn't really provide at face value the full context, and we started. And his second chapter deals a whole lot with context and undoing ego's macros, and it's fascinating stuff in there. But the context part of it in the first section, I was remembering a cartoon, and maybe I've shared this before, but I thought it was very appropriate how, we have such a limited context, we don't really see the big picture. And the cartoon that came to mind that I ran across years ago was this, 70,000-foot view, zoomed in, as if with a telescope from outer space, and you see just this little tiny Jeep, little four-wheel drive rig out in the middle of the desert, and you can barely tell there's two characters in it, and there's this huge cartoon bubble coming out from one of them, that dwarfs the size of this little vehicle. And inside, one guy's telling the other, yeah, it must have been another one of those, overblown rumors, just wild, crazy, exaggerated rumors kind of thing. And what they don't see is that they're driving inside of a footprint that's about a mile across. And I thought, what a great reminder. We don't see the big picture. We have no idea, the enormity of the, of what we are and what we believe we are,
Oh, yeah.
Either one of those, right? I mean, really.
That's absolutely true. That if we had any notion whatsoever of the absolute magnitude of our holiness, which mm-hmm. is, it begins to dawn on you, and that's what's happened to me, is that it's really begun to dawn on me, and especially this first 40 days of this year doing the lessons again. It's really honest to God, the before, when I would be saying all those, my holiness is looking at this and that, and I would look at this and that and try to cast holiness onto it, but just this time through the lessons, I'm actually seeing the truth of it, that it is holy, and not because it is a body or because it is a world or it is a life of any type. It's because it's what I made from what I had. I thought I had corrupted heaven somehow, and in reality I couldn't do that. It's not possible. And so I'm beginning to see the cracks in the world, the reality of the fact that everything that is here is a projection of my own thinking. That's my own mind is projecting this. And I think that when you begin to see that in a real way, it shifts everything. I've done meditations where I've been here in my room and absolutely been the center focus of everything in the universe and recognizing that it only existed because I was projecting it there. And that's pretty stunning. That's a pretty stunning thing. Of course, that's not my everyday 24/7 situation, but you know that Jesus doesn't say that you are instantly going to be having that situation all the time. These are things we have to work on, and it's really clear to me that the work actually does it doesn't do anything actually other than just remove these basically inherently flawed thoughts about reality. And that's really all it's doing, is just is removing the thing that's keeping you from seeing the truth of what is. And when you begin to see what's behind the curtain, it's completely different.
It really is, isn't it? Yeah, and it's a removal process. It's an undoing process, as this section suggests. And the whole course really is about, and one of Ken's comments that I think is good to keep in context is this course, A Course in Miracles, that is, it's not a course in yes, it's a course in not no. It's really a course in removing or undoing or releasing ourselves from erroneous beliefs about our identity and the of necessity, because it's a course in pure non-duality, of the identity of everyone and everything else. And that we're all in the same boat, we're all in the same self, we're all inclusive, and when we, like you say, when you start, practicing that more and more, there's a tremendous grace and a tremendous feeling of peace that comes from recognizing that everyone shares that same perfect innocence, that same perfect holiness, that has nothing to do with our appearances in the world or on the level of form, time, and space. Yeah. Shall I go on with the next paragraph?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So here's quoting from chapter 19. Every obstacle that peace must flow across is surmounted in just the same way. The fear that raised it yields to the love beyond, and so the fear is gone. And so it is with this. The desire to get rid of peace and drive the Holy Spirit from you fades in the presence of the quiet recognition that you love Him. Capital H. The exaltation of the body is given up in favor of the spirit, which you love as you could never love the body. And the appeal of death is lost forever as love's attraction stirs and calls to you. From beyond each of the obstacles to love, love itself has called. And each has been surmounted by the power of the attraction of what lies beyond. Your wanting fear seemed to be holding them in place. Yet when you heard the voice of love beyond them, you answered, and they disappeared. And that's from chapter 19, section 4. And, what a perfect intro to, letting go of the fear to get rid of it, the fear to get rid of the peace. And basically, just he's saying, we beyond this crazy thought system of fear and the sin and guilt antecedents of that fear, the foundation of it, they're all manufactured beliefs and ideas, but beyond them is the true love, not the love based on the specialness of a particular individual or group or situation or whatever, but the unconditional, unbounded appreciation and acceptance that goes beyond any experience we've ever had in the world, that we feel calling to us. And I think that call is really what inexorably draws us back to, if not this form of the material, it will, whether we do this on this in this world or on a different planet altogether, and where the Course in Miracles has never surfaced, or in a different lifetime, or whatever, we'll hear that call eventually and respond to it fully, because it's that last sentence. He says, "Yet when you heard the voice of love beyond them, you answered and they disappeared." He's speaking in here from beyond the space-time dream, as in, you know, the tiny mad idea is over and done. We still think we're in the midst of it, but that from the perspective that the Holy Spirit and Jesus as author of this curriculum, he's basically saying, it's a done deal. You're home free. Not to worry. from where he sees us, you know, there's no sweat needed. I mean, we can afford to be relaxed and enjoy the process and, you know, feel the grace that's been given us to undo all this crazy ego stuff.
Yeah, and I love, I mean, I'm looking at this paragraph and actually recognizing that, you know, Jesus is really saying that we don't have to push away what we don't want. Mm-hmm. We have to just accept what we do. Recognize that we do love God, that we do love our brother, that we do love ourselves, and recognizing that and allowing that that desire, that it's you know, almost like I've heard people call it nostalgia, and I recognize that is really the word. You know, there's a beautiful part in the Course where Jesus is saying, remember a time, you know, long ago when, you know, everything was beautiful and the music was wonderful. Remembering all that, that's this sense of nostalgia that you and I, every single one of us knows, we've felt it and, you know, kind of pushed it aside because what, you know, that's not how things are now, or but what good is that now for me? Because, you know that there was something that was perfect, and you know that perfection. So it's calling to us. It's calling to me. And all I have to do is listen to the call and allow the love. Remember that is what I'm here for, is to be holy and to be loved. And you know, when I recognize that, then everything, those things I was thinking I need to push away are gone. Mm-hmm. They really do disappear.
Yeah. As you were sharing that, I was sort of picturing, you know, to use contemporary vernacular metaphors, I was thinking of, you know, how popular these, you know, online video games are. And I mean, it was just, it's an incredibly vast industry now in this world. You know, that just started from, you know, I suppose the little Pong games, you know, originally. But now we have these, you know, elaborate photorealistic things with monsters and all kinds of warfare and all kinds of crazy stuff. But at the heart of a lot of those games, and I would say the vast majority of them, there's a we-they paradigm. There's a, you know, a friend and foe kind of mindset. But that's actually, we can turn it around and use that, I think that sort of thinking, recognize the intrinsic flaw in it of making enemies out of everyone and everything, which is what the ego does by default, even if it doesn't admit it. And so when we are confronted with something that our egos don't like, the Holy Spirit says, I can see this differently. I could see peace instead of this. And that calling, and as you were mentioning the Forgotten Song, I was also thinking of Workbook Lesson 182, I Will Be Still in This and Go Home, and how poetic and nostalgic, you know, so much of the writing in the Course is in places that gives us that memory of, you know, the peace that transcends all the crazy battles and warfare that seem to beset us, and we, you know, we try to find escape through you know, more of the stuff that has been beleaguering us, you know, which is kind of crazy and ironic, but the Holy Spirit can turn anything around. And so instead of destroying the other characters in the dream, Holy Spirit essentially kind of vaporizes the masks and the barriers and the dark facades to reveal the light that's behind all of those seeming other characters in the dream. And when the light is revealed beyond the special love and the special hate, that's when the fusion transcends the confusion.
Exactly. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's pretty much the thought, yeah. So.
Going to say in the manual for teachers, Jesus talks about the body's eyes will continue to see differences, but the mind that has let itself be healed will no longer acknowledge them. There will be those who seem to be sicker than others, and the body's eyes will report their changed appearances as before, but the healed mind will put them all in one category. They are unreal. This is the gift of its teacher, the understanding that only two categories are meaningful in sorting out the messages the mind receives from what appears to be the outside world. And of these two, but one is real. Just as reality is wholly real, apart from size and shape and time and place, for differences cannot exist within it, so too are illusions without distinctions. The one answer to sickness of any kind is healing. The one answer to all illusions is truth. And really, that's exactly what we're talking about here, is that there is only one truth, and everything else is an illusion. You don't have to say, this is, you know, but he has cancer, but, you know, they're having a party, or, you know, none of that. That's all a story. None of it is true. The only thing that's true is that we are the Holy Son of God. And, you know, how does that work in a practicality? It doesn't. Because there's no practicality in reality. There's no need for practicality in reality. Does that mean that Lynn's life on earth as a human being discontinues? Well, Lynn never had a life on earth as a human being. Whatever that is continues to operate in the same way. If that is any, I mean, it's the story. That's all it is. And if I'm not involved in it, what's the purpose of it? You know, am I taking away something from someone? No, because they don't notice anything missing if they are there, which they're not, because they're an illusion. So let's not go into that.
I find it really helpful to remember that you know, the relationships that we have with everyone, when we turn them over to that inner kindness teacher, those become the signposts and the things that sort of anchor us in the awareness that we're undoing the ego, that we're letting go of the insanity when we look with loving kindness on each other and recognize the ego's frantic attempt and desperate struggle to maintain differences as a means for justifying warfare on countless levels, even if it's just, well, I don't like what this person does or how they look or what they say or you know, it can go on and on for millennia. But once we see the folly of making our identity and our peace of mind, which has everything to do with our identity, contingent on a dream figure shenanigans, including our own, because ultimately that's all there is. then we just say, oh, well, that was silly. That's forgivable. And I can forgive myself for having made up that dream of separation and all the characters that seem to people it.
That's absolutely right, and so that's really the only thing that we have to do. Then it's not complex, it's not difficult. There's no trick, question.
It's profoundly simple, isn't it? And that's part of our resistance. Is our ego says, "Well, how could it possibly be that easy?" Because the only thing the ego knows is complexity and the seek but do not find. The strategy, which is part of the incentive.
It is, absolutely. So,
you want to read on?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, why don't you go ahead and read on, because I forgot where we are. Okay, I was moving. Okay.
This is the miracle's work complete, for now the Son of God is free to choose again and can replace the ego with Jesus as his teacher. All traces of the dream fade into nothingness as the Son of God, reunited at last with the whole sonship at the journey's end, will, quote, disappear into the presence beyond the veil, not to be lost but found, not to be seen but known, unquote. That's also from chapter 19. I mean, this whole book really is about chapter 19, but he pulls in a lot of other stuff that relates to it. And his usual symphonic metaphor of showing how these phrases and passages and movements, if you will, kind of all relate to each other.
I love that. And, you know, I used to be mystified by it. The first time I ever saw Ken, he was like, I just was amazed because he didn't really even read the passages. He would just go to them, but he knew what they were. And his book was like falling apart and pages flying around. And he would just, you know, pick it up and move it and flipping through it. And everybody's flipping through their books to, you know, catch up with him. But he knew it. And he saw the symphonic relationship. He could see how the lessons and the text and the manual for teachers and all the different things all built together to make this really complex but clear picture of our situation and what we're doing here and what we need to do and how we need to do it. And is just was so beautiful to see him, but then to read his writing is the same way. But what I was going to say is, I used to feel like blown away by that. I was like, oh my God, you know, this is so amazing. But now I can do the same thing. You know, I'm not as, you know, eloquent about it as Ken, that's for sure. But, you know, I can see, oh, look, this is just like what he said over here. And this is how this works and comes together. And you really build a, like a fabric of the picture, basically, of what's going on. That's really how you learn to believe something different. Because, you know, it's one thing to believe, you know, A Course in Miracles, but to believe it in all of its complexity, according to the ego, of course, but it satisfies every question. It answers every question. And that's why it seems so complex, because it has so many answers, but they're all the same answer, and that is, you know, wake up, you're dreaming.
Yeah, and there's no real urgency other than, of course, reminds us, you know, why wait for heaven? Why continue to be masochistic and suffer needlessly when there's a real alternative that's available always, every moment.
Every moment.
And that's just what we're here to remind ourselves. Like, yeah, I can see peace instead of this. I could see the innocence of everyone, including myself. I had an interesting experience actually watching the State of the Union address the other evening, and because I watch, you know, with my wife and I, a lot of those comic pundit shows, you know, Colbert, Trevor Noah, John Oliver, all those kind of things. And it's just kind of fun, you know, a little comic relief way to get the news kind of thing. But there's also a tendency to take those jokes and use them as fuel for reinforcing guilt if you're not careful. And it's so easy to do, because when the news is paraded about, you know, the seeming, you know, minor abuses to atrocities and everything in between of all these public figures, particularly political ones, you know, it gets real easy to make big deals out of stuff and forget that, A, that those are my projections, and B, that on the level where it makes sense and where I can do something about it, I can choose to forgive everything and everyone, whether they're on my computer or TV screen or my phone, or tablet, or there's somebody under my roof, or in the neighborhood, or family member, or coworker. It doesn't matter. I mean, highway, anything that crosses our path that is a cause for a grievance or victimizer victimhood, victim scenario is fair game for undoing the ego's shenanigans. And when we do that, we can see the bigger picture. And what helped me the other day was during that broadcast, seeing the entire, I guess maybe not entire, but certainly the majority of the people in Congress and the president and judiciary. I mean, essentially a large portion of what I think of as the U.S. government in one room, and the camera would zoom in and out of all the faces, a lot of familiar faces that have been in the news in the last few years, and then zooming back and saying, oh wow, it's all one thing. And I think that zooming, that context of putting it in perspective, was enormously helpful, and I was able to forgive myself for those projections that I've made. And I tried fairly diligently to avoid that, but still, you find yourself saying, oh, well, gee, if they hadn't done that, or if they would only do this, and we do that with our family members, and we do with, like I say, everybody that we interact with, there's some level of that going on. But what happened for me was, I think, that large context of seeing everyone in the same room, for the most part, provided more full context. The other thing that happened was during the Democratic rebuttal, when Stacey Abrams got up and shared her opening remark, maybe it was a closing remark, anyway, a remark she made, I thought was really interesting. She was saying how she was disappointed in what she just heard, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but she wanted the president to succeed. And I thought, wow.
I thought that too.
I thought, now there's an inclusive, that was a great example of overcoming level confusion, because on the level of form, probably a lot of people would think, something needs to change, but on the level of truth, which is what we're talking about here, nothing needs to change, and the success, in my mind, and this may not have been what she was thinking, but it certainly worked for me, is the success that I want everyone to achieve, including the person named Donald Trump and everyone in that room, is I want them to succeed in the atonement, the waking up. And for me to exclude anyone from that process would be to exclude myself. And that all-inclusive, pure non-duality, I think, rubber hits the road when there's any person in your life or group of people get relegated to the we-they status again, and just watch the slippery slope of ego strategy trying to put people in those categories, and instead of seeing the perfect oneness that really is there if we can step back and see the big picture. And again, that's where I think the context of the camera zooming back and seeing all three branches of government assembled in one place, with a few exceptions kind of thing. It's like, well, here's an example of, on the level of form, symbols that represent, the parts of our mind that do different things, but yet it's really all the same thing, isn't it? And we're all in the same boat. So anyway, hope that was helpful.
I love that. That's perfect and beautiful. And I was just, when you started saying Stacey Abrams, I thought that was the one thing that I heard her say, was that she hoped that he would succeed. And I recognize, like Nancy Pelosi, I was listening to someone the other day, and they were asking her, well, do you think, that President Trump is doing this and this and this and this? And she looked at him and she said, really kind of a shock look on her face, and she said, well, I would hope not. And I thought, the presumption, even if she was lying, even if that was just made up, I don't care. That is the presumption of innocence, would hope not. I would hope that you are, you are innocent, and you are innocent.
Mm-hmm.
The ego can't see anything but guilt, and the spirit can only see innocence. And so if you really want to bring it down,
room,
yeah, exactly. You want to bring it down to reality, is, do I want my brother to be this way? Do I want to see guilt? And you know, the healer's prayer, let me see this brother as I see myself. You know, that is such a two-edged sword, too, because maybe I am seeing my brother as I see myself, and I am seeing only guilt. And so, you know, what happens when I begin to see that, you know, I'm only hoping for your success, and I'm only hoping for the truth, and I'm only hoping to see innocence. And so if that's what I'm doing, then why not just see innocence and forget about the guilt? You know?
And the success, the only success that really ultimately makes sense is that true eternal innocence, isn't it?
That's it. That is the only thing you need to know.
It comes about through inclusion. Right?
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay, let me read on. Let's see, you finished the paragraph that says, not to be seen but known.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what is it that Jesus teaches us but the truth of the atonement principle? And in a form that we can accept and understand. The atonement states that the separation from God never occurred. And therefore, that the oneness of heaven has never been compromised nor affected. It is this oneness and this alone that must be taught to minds that believe only in separation. Enter here the holy relationship as the teaching device used to reach minds trapped in the illusion. This quote-unquote tactic on the part of the Holy Spirit of dualistically reflecting non-dualistic truth is summarized clearly in the following important passage from the beginning of chapter 25 in the text. All right, so this is here. I mean, here it is. Here's where the rubber's meeting the road. since you believe that you are separate, heaven presents itself to you as separate too. Not that it is in truth, but that the link that has been given you to join the truth may reach to you through what you understand, and Ken says the example, the language of duality, Father and Son and Holy Spirit are as one, as are all your brothers joined as one in truth. Christ and his Father never have been separate, and Christ abides within your understanding in the part of you that shares his Father's will. The Holy Spirit links the other part, the tiny mad desire to be separate, different, and special, to the Christ to make the oneness clear to what is really one. In this non-dualistic truth, in this world, this non-dualistic truth is not understood, but can be taught. And these are in brackets, dualistically through symbol and metaphor. So in this world, truth is not understood, but can be taught. And you know, Jesus, you know, Christ is using our own belief to teach us the truth about what is real. And the fact that we are not separate, and that the Father's, that when you pan back and look at the camera from above, you see that they are all one in one place. You know, Congress and the Senate and the government, all one place, one mm-hmm. thing, and yet we perceive it as separate individuals. And the Holy Spirit is the link to show us just those kind of pictures.
It's a completely eternal union. That has no states.
Exactly.
to make a pun out of the name of the event that I've witnessed in there.
I love that. It's perfect. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so do you want to read on, or do you want any more comments?
Sure. The Holy Spirit serves Christ's purpose in your mind so that the aim of specialness can be corrected where the error lies. And just a quick aside, since, you know, Valentine's Day is coming up this next week, this would be a particularly appropriate. Maybe we can we can tie into that a little bit, since we're running out of time this time, about special love and special hate, you know, are transcended with forgiveness. And then we see the real love that's behind it. Okay, so anyway, he says, because his purpose still is one with both the Father and the Son, he knows the will of God and what you really will. But this is understood by mind perceived as one, aware that it is one, and so experienced. It is the Holy Spirit's function to teach you how this oneness is experienced, in brackets the Holy Instant, what you must do that it can be experienced, in brackets forgiveness, and where you should go to do it, in brackets relationships. Very appropriate. And all this takes note of time and place, in brackets the world of duality, as if they were discrete. For while you think this part of you is separate, the concept of a oneness joined as one is meaningless. That's one of those phrases in the Course that we kind of intellectually say, yeah, sure, right, I think I get that. But we obviously don't, otherwise we wouldn't need this remedial curriculum. But that's okay, because, you know, we will eventually, and we will let go, as God takes the final step, and then we'll be returned to that perfect oneness that we never left. But we appear to need these intermediate steps and the sort of latter metaphor as we undo the ego and seemingly, you know, dribs and drabs. So anyway, it is apparent that a mind so split could never be the teacher of a oneness which unites all things within itself. Again, a concept that we could just, you know, kind of hope to grok, you know, as a reflection of what we're reading here. And so it is, and so what is within this mind and does unite all things together must be its teacher. Yet must it, capital I, it use the, in brackets, dualistic language that this mind can in the, again in brackets, dualistic condition in which it thinks it is. And it must use all learning to transfer illusions to the truth, taking all false, in brackets dualistic, ideas of what you are, and leading you beyond them to the, in brackets, non-dualistic truth that is beyond them. That's chapter 25 in the text.
That's pretty cool, and I think I'm going to find that and post it in the room, because this really honestly says that the ego, you know, he said this before in many places, and a lot of times people don't believe it. The ego can learn. It can be taught. And this is exactly what's happening, is that it is becoming better and better and better, or more and more and more in tune with God's will. Even though, of course, the ego can never be in tune with God's will, but it has a desire to grow and become enlightened, and that is because in truth all things come to the light, all things are drawn to love, all things must return to that oneness. And so, you know, the ego knows that, you know, its time is short, and it really it's learning how to be a better ego, which we call the higher mind, or, you know, but it's not because the Holy Spirit is not involved with this kind of judgment thinking in any way at all, and knows nothing of this. You know, it's only the ego that understands enlightenment or has any desire to be awakened. But it can be taught, and that's what's the beauty of it, is that, you know, it knows that, it's just like, you know, an infant will, you know, unless it dies, it will grow up eventually. You know, I mean, it will not be an infant for eternity, unless it's a vampire, and that's a whole different kind of thought. But I don't know why I thought that, but you know, eventually we will wake up. It's, you know, there's no doubt about it, and you know, all we're being offered now is, you know, a chance to be in alignment with that and to, you know, speed up the process, because that's what we call collapsing time. through practicing forgiveness. So it's beautiful that Jesus, you know, talks to us about, you know, this is really what's happening here, is that you're learning, you're growing up, and you're recognizing the falseness of your ego thinking, and allowing your mind to be used for something much more constructive. And that's the beauty of the Course in Miracles.
We're it's a course in mind training, you know, undoing the belief in separation, action, the dualistic dreams, and that's what reveals the happiness that's beyond it.
Exactly. And Carrie says in the room, whether misguided or not, the ego still desires love. That's it. Everything desires love. Everything is drawn to love. Everything is attracted to love. And love flows across everything. You know, that's what gets rid of the obstacles to peace. Is that forgiveness and love overcome them, as Jesus says so beautifully in the book. So it looks like our time is just about up. Since I haven't mentioned it, and I know you probably will notice it on Facebook if you haven't already, that today is my birthday.
Oh, that's right. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I was going to mention it.
Okay, so I didn't want to not say anything, and then you have your day. Oh, shoot! She should have said something. But anyway, I'm so grateful, and I'm doing a fundraiser to get a new computer. That's my birthday present, is to get a new computer to be able to do a better, more bang-up kind of a job here in ACIM Gather. And I'm so grateful that people have been donating. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And, you know, it's the people who teach here who are donating for the most part, because they recognize that this is a place where they can come and talk about A Course in Miracles to a loving and open audience. Who, you know, are, you know, peaceful and non-judgmental. It's a great gift, and so I'm grateful for it. And, you know, with a new computer, it's going to be even easier to operate, or so I think. Something else come up, I don't know, but anyway.
Well, hopefully that will. One of the obstacles on the level of form. So,
exactly. I mean, that's
or a couple, since you mentioned a couple of questions. But anyway, well, thanks as always, Lynn, for sharing the hour with me, and I always find it helpful to, you know, have these ideas kind of flow through my thought system and you know, revitalize my appreciation and you know, desire to be vigilant and mindful and gentle with myself and everyone. So,
absolutely.
Have a great week, all.
All right. Thank you so much, Bruce Rawls, and we'll see you next week.
Likewise.
And I'm going to turn the mic over to Iris and Carrie.
All right.